Good morning. It's good to be gathered this day. We are continuing to launch the chapel series on parables. Pastoral assistants opened that up a week ago thematically, and today Don Clymer, professor of Spanish, you'll hear a more full introduction later, brings the first reflection on a particular parable. And we'll continue this journey through the semester.
Luke 15:11-32. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am, starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come home,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf for him because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your prosperity with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'"
Good morning, everyone. It is a great pleasure and an honor to be introducing our speaker today. Don Clymer has broad international experience in Latin America and Europe in both church-related service and academics. Prior to EMU, he taught Spanish, German, and Latin American studies at Heston College and directed their Global Issues Seminar. He has also served as Director of Communications for the Virginia Mennonite Conference and Board of Missions. Don recently served 5 years as Director of EMU's Cross-Cultural Programs. In 2006, he returned full-time to the classroom. I've had the pleasure of taking a class from Don, and his complete and thorough knowledge of Spanish was always actually very impressive. And as a native Honduran, it was always a bit unnerving to have a class with a gringo whose knowledge of the Spanish language was more complete than my own. Aside from his interest in language, he has completed a degree at Eastern Mennonite Seminary with a concentration in spiritual formation. So if you ever take a class with Don, don't be surprised if the class turns into a theological discussion until your Spanish vocabulary runs out. Now with that, I present to you Professor Don Clymer.
Now you can understand why I asked Julio to introduce me. I knew he would bring a little bit of Latino flair to his introduction. which is part of who I am. Also, as I was preparing for this particular talk about the prodigal son, I ran into Andy Miller, who is our now director of cross-cultural programs. And he asked me if we could meet about a certain thing that we're dealing with, and I said, no, I don't have time, I'm sorry. And he said, what do you mean you don't have time? He said, you know why they have the opening song at every chapel? And I said, no, why? And he said, well, that's so you can get your thoughts together to know what you're going to say. Unfortunately, with this audience, a lot of my peers and fellow students, I thought I had to spend a little bit more time thinking about it than just during the song, as precious as it was. The prodigal son actually is not quite as mysterious or obscure as many of the parables that we will be looking at this semester. It's pretty straightforward. There were two brothers and a father. The meanings of the story is pretty easy to grasp. This is not to say that a fuller meaning couldn't be brought, and I'm going to try in my few minutes today to hopefully give you some new insights into this particular parable. But before I begin, I want to tell you, and this is kind of a crass advertisement, I'm basing many of my ideas today on chapter 10 of the recently released book, The Spacious Heart, co-authored by me and my sister. There are many directions we could go with this parable, but I would like to concentrate on two quite contrasting attributes of people that are identified in this parable. One of them seems to come as naturally to us as breathing. The other one takes years of spiritual practice in order to develop. The one is a human tendency, and the other is a godly quality. Now, I realize that most of you think that since the title of the parable is the prodigal son, that I'm going to spend my time talking about the prodigal son. You know, the younger guy who ran off into a faraway country, who wished his father dead by asking for his inheritance, the one who squandered that inheritance in wild living in a faraway country, the one who finally came to his senses and realized that his father's servants were better off at home than what he was, and the one who decided to come home and face the wrath of his father and his brother. You know, I could talk about my own running away to a faraway country when I was a young man, but I didn't ask for my inheritance when I did that because as a family of 11 children, a working class family, there was no inheritance, and there still isn't. And I didn't live wildly in that faraway country. It was Honduras, Julio. Even if there may have been a little bit of rebelliousness. After all, I was part of Eastern Mennonite Mission's voluntary service program, and we are, of course, upstanding young Christian boys. Anyway, so if you thought that I was going to talk about the prodigal son, you were wrong. The two characteristics that I want to focus on this morning come from the older brother and the father in this story. The older brother is a perfect example of the human trait that most of us have and carry with us. And I want to call it Schadenfreude. Yes, I said Schadenfreude. It comes from the German. Did you never hear of that word? It's in a dictionary. Look it up. S-C-H-A-D-N-F-R-E-U-D-E. The best definition that I can give for Schadenfreude is when you're on the playground, you might remember this as a little kid, and you were watching some other, usually a boy, bullying a smaller kid, and a teacher catches him. And so you stand there while the teacher is maybe carrying this boy by his ear across the playground, and you look at him and you go, na, 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 na. Have you ever, by the way, you could have laughed at that. Have you never done that? Have you heard it done? Na, 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 na. That's Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude is enjoying someone else's misfortune. It's reveling in someone else's pain. It usually happens when we think that somebody gets what they deserve. It's more than likely a holier-than-thou attitude where we place ourselves in a morally superior position and point our finger at the other person that we think needs to be condemned for their behavior. So what does Schadenfreude have to do with the elder son? The text that we read really doesn't tell us how much he knew about his younger brother's condition just before he returned home, you know, eating pig food and wallowing there in the mud that we see pictures of in our Sunday school books. It does tell us, however, that he knew that his brother had squandered his money on prostitutes. We can imagine that if he had known that his brothers had fallen onto very hard times in the faraway country, he probably would have thought, na 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 na, you got what you deserved. He probably would have enjoyed the adversity of his brother. We can surmise this from the story because of the way he reacted to hearing about the feast that his father had prepared for his wayward brother. For some reason, Schadenfreude is more natural to the human species than its opposite, which I want to look at later, mercy. We are much more inclined to wish that people get what they deserve than what they really need. I remember when I was in college, and you probably have had this experience as well, I had a friend who was a perpetual procrastinator. Now, I have a few of those students in my classes now. You know who you are. We were in the same class and had a very, very large paper to do, and so I spent weeks on it. And I was pretty proud of my work, but when I got it back, I got a B on it. My friend, on the other hand, stayed up all night, the night before it was due, and sloppily, hastily put his paper together, at least so I thought, and he got an A. I was furious. His inconsistent academic track record made me think that he didn't deserve an A. In my view, he got better than what he deserved. My mind was riddled with Schadenfreude thinking. I so wanted to say to him, na 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 na, but I couldn't. And I could not rejoice in his good fortune. I would rather have seen him get a lower grade so that I could revel in his pain. Like me, the older son could not rejoice in the good fortune of his little brother. That makes me more like the older brother than the younger, but there's more. When we wallow in Schadenfreude, we become bitter, resentful, and angry. In fact, it could be said that we are more lost than the prodigal because of our sanctimoniousness. Wow, that was another million-dollar word. How interesting that sanctimonious and Schadenfreude go hand in hand. Religious, pious, good church folk, myself included, so often look at sinners like the prodigal son with our nose up in the air. We want them to get what they deserve. We want them to pay for their misdeeds. Henry Nouwen, in his classic book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, when writing about the older son, nails me with this quote. There is so much resentment among the just and the righteous. There is so much judgment, condemnation, and prejudice among the saints. There is so much frozen anger among people who are so concerned about avoiding sin. End quote. The simple story of how I wished deserved judgment and condemnation on my friend with his grade shows my true colors. How much more do my colors show in other important matters of relating to people who I think deserve punishment for their behavior? I think he nails a lot of other religious folks as well. Schadenfreude comes much more naturally to us than we care to admit. In my view, the real lesson from the story or the parable of the prodigal son lies in the character of the father. This is the second attribute I want to highlight in my comments. The characteristic that the father shows is mercy. Mercy is receiving unmerited favor. Mercy is rejoicing when someone gets what they need rather than what they deserve. Mercy is receiving unmerited favor. Mercy is rejoicing when someone gets what they need rather than what they deserve. Mercy is giving someone what they don't deserve. Mercy is the father welcoming home his wayward son with a huge party rather than making him work as a servant. Mercy is a godly trait. Being merciful seems to run against every fiber of our human makeup. To show mercy takes years of spiritual discipline to overcome our tendency to Schadenfreude. Thankfully, there are stories of mercy. I have two from my own earthly father. Now, before I hold him up as a saint from these two stories, truth be told, he more than often gave us what we deserved. And for me, that often included a thick belt or a stick. But I want to tell two stories of the times when he did show mercy to us kids, something that surely was part of his own spiritual formation. When I was around 3 years old, my family moved off the farm. My dad had to settle some affairs with the Ford Tractor Agency, where he had done business over the years, and dragged three of us children along in the car. While he went in, he explicitly warned us not to get out of the car, that he would only be gone for a few minutes. While waiting for him in the car, I spied a toy tractor in the showroom window. I sneaked out of the car into the agency, crawled over a barrier into the place where the toy tractor was being displayed, and happily played with it. I don't know how I got back to the car before my dad, but my other two siblings couldn't wait to squeal on my disobedience. They couldn't wait to say, na 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 na. Well, the trip home was in silence. I was expecting a scolding at best and a whipping at worst. I suffered deeply, awaiting my fate. Nothing happened. Several days later, my dad surprised me with a gift of a toy tractor, exactly like the one in the showroom window of the tractor dealership. I couldn't have been more elated. Instead of punishment, I received a reward. I received unmerited favor, the definition of mercy, of grace, of forgiveness. I did not deserve what I received. Anyone want to come and play with it? On another occasion, my sister, who, like me, is the ultimate introvert, had to participate in a Bible quiz during an evening service at our church when she was quite young. By the way, I want to assure you that she tells this story a lot better in this book than I'm going to do now, but I'm going to give a shot at it. Her question was, where was Jesus born? And she answered, Nazareth. Now, the quizmaster gave her credit for that answer because it was kind of like he did grow up in Nazareth, but he wasn't really born there. He was born in Bethlehem. You didn't know that? I mean, nobody reacted to that? Okay. Anyway, when she realized the mistake that she had made and had made a mistake on such an easy answer, she was mortified, and she ran out of the church crying her head off and went and hid in the car. And while she was waiting for the service to end, all sorts of negative thoughts ran through her mind about how she would be punished, about how she would get what she deserved for what she had done. She dreaded church coming to an end and her fate. Well, the church had some snacks available after the service, but my sister was no way she was going to go in and face all those people with her humiliation, even in spite of the sweet treats that were available. Well, suddenly, through the semi-darkness, I was going to use penumbra, but then I thought, no, I won't have another million-dollar word in there. She saw our dad approaching the car with something in his hand. The dreaded moment of judgment had arrived. And in her terrified mind, she imagined that what he was carrying, believe this or not, was a hymn book that he would use to spank her. Really, Dad, a hymn book? Instead, it was a plate with a brownie on it. Here, he said, giving her what she needed rather than what she deserved. You missed the treats after church. In our parable for today, the younger son received the same treatment from his father as my sister and I had from our father. He received a reward instead of punishment, unmerited favor. Mercy. I don't know about you, but growing up, my image of God was a polar opposite of the father in this story. The father who opened his arms to welcome home his wayward son with mercy, my image of God was an angry God ready to zap me for every misstep that I took. You know, that father that I told you about who flailed me with his belt. Apparently, Henry Nouwen, in the book that I referred to earlier, found that to be true for himself as well, and I quote, "It dawned on me that even my best theological and spiritual formation had not been able to completely free me from the Father God, who remains somewhat threatening and somewhat fearsome. I have seen how this fear of becoming subject to God's revenge and punishment has paralyzed the mental and emotional lives of many people, independently of their age, religion, or lifestyle," unquote. The God that Nouwen describes, and the one that I grew up with, and the one that many people still carry in their souls, is not the God that Jesus describes in the parable of the prodigal son. This father is merciful. This father prepares a banquet for his wayward children. This father rejoices when the lost son returns. Instead of giving the son what he deserves, he gives him what he needs. And we are to be like the father in the story. Jesus tells us in Luke 6:36, "Be merciful, just as your father is merciful." How is it possible to develop this unnatural trait of being merciful? Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into what I was going to say completely, but I do want to talk about the Amish tragedy at Nickel Mines and how the Amish were able to forgive what happened and show mercy to the perpetrator's family. In his book, Amish Grace, Donald Crable says, he interviewed the grandfather of the perpetrator, Amy. "There is forgiveness in all of this," he said. "There have been so many Amish stopping at Amy's house and expressing their forgiveness and condolences and bringing her gifts." Grable claims that the hearts of the Amish, by their very way of life, had prepared them to show mercy and to forgive them almost immediately. They were ready to show mercy because their way of life had prepared them. I think that's a very important statement. Their way of life had prepared them. And we have a lot to learn from that example of the Amish. God has prepared a banquet for each one of us, no matter how far we have strayed from the purpose of our creation. He will welcome us with open, merciful arms when we return to the image of God that he created within us. As Henry Nouwen wrote, "God rejoices not because the problems of the world have been solved, not because all human pain and suffering has come to an end, nor because thousands of people have been converted and are now praising him for his goodness. No, God rejoices because one of his children who was lost has been found. What I am called to do is to enter into that joy," end quote. Schadenfreude or mercy, bitterness and resentment or joy, the choice is yours. Let's pray. God of all gods and Lord of all lords, thank you for showing us your mercy, for giving us what we need rather than what we deserve. Thank you for your unconditional love in spite of what too many religious systems have taught us. Help us to be merciful to others as you have been merciful to us. And thank you for becoming flesh and living among us to give us a loving, merciful example to follow. Amen.